You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Dan Roebuck and Richard Boxall.
Hello and welcome to the Race to Dubai show as Ryan Fox secures a first European Tour title following a fantastic performance at the ISPS Handa World Super 6 Perth.
It's been a tough day. I think I went down the last and all bar the final, and the conditions were pretty brutal again, and it was pretty tough yesterday as well, so I'm very happy to be standing here.
It was nearly another match play masterclass from Adrian Otegi, but the Spaniard just missed out on the top prize.
Obviously a little bit disappointed after losing the final, but as you said, it's been a good week. I mean, what I felt is that I went like from low to up during the week, so that's good as well. That's a good feeling.
We'll hear from both finalists as we look back at the best of the action. Plus, we'll preview the next event, the WGC Mexico Championship. Hello, I'm Dan Roebuck, and I'm joined by European Tour winner Richard Boxall and golf coach, journalist and YouTuber Peter Finch. Boxy, how are you?
I'm not too bad. You have a nice weekend?
I had a very good weekend. I was
busy
commentating on the European Championship for futsal women's.
Oh, right.
In which Spain beat Portugal 4-0.
Is that the kind of game I heard that every time the ball goes out they stop play?
Yeah, it was a long shift. Let's say hello to Peter. Peter, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you very much.
Now we've introduced you as golf coach, journalist, and YouTuber. Tell us a little bit more about yourself. It says here in the script without sounding like Cilla Black, so don't sound like Cilla Black.
Okay, I will attempt not to.
Excellent.
I'm a golf coach. I make online content to try and help people improve their golf games. That's the simple basis of it. If you do want to check it out, just type my name into Google, ignore the actor called Peter Finch. Well, don't ignore him, he was very talented, but look on Peter Finch Golf instead.
Listen, he did everything there apart from getting his mobile number in.
That's what should happen.
I learned the hard way not to give that out.
Oh, right.
173,000 YouTube followers. Now, I'm not quite sure what our audience is for the Race to Dubai podcast. I don't think it's that many. So usually we try and sort of give our guests a bit of a lift in their career. This time it's the other way around, Boxy.
Yes, it is the other way around,
isn't it?
Yeah, no, listen, Pete, that's pretty impressive. I don't do all this. Is it tweeting? Is that what you call it?
Yes, come on.
Yeah, no, I'm not really into it. I'm 57 and don't go to school anymore. I mean, I'm not really into that sort of stuff. But is the plan, Pete, the plan is to get a few touring pros on board with you?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, my ultimate plan is to do this for as long as I enjoy it.
Yeah.
I still want to be a golf coach, for as long as I can be. But to do all the online stuff, it is pretty much kind of 7 days a week. So I'm going to do it until I stop enjoying it. Hopefully coach some, I'm going to say better players, but I do coach some good players, but tour pros is...
Is your aim, really?
Yeah, I think everyone wants to reach the peak of their career, don't they? And I suppose for a golf coach, coaching tour pros is that peak. But I get so much enjoyment out of coaching just what you call regular handicap golfers that I've no desire to get there yet.
Listen, I want to know, because I've never been very good at teaching. I see the ball and I want to draw it, I'll roll it over a bit more with my right hand. The beginners, the people who start from the very beginning, how hard is that?
It's hard in the sense that if you've just been coaching normal golfers all day, then all of a sudden you have a beginner.
Yeah.
It's difficult because you have to communicate in a different way. But at the same time, you have something of a blank canvas that you can work on. So there's no particularly bad habits. Well, golf-wise, they might have some terrible normal habits, but you can coach them into playing the game more successfully than you would have done otherwise. So in that sense, that's exciting. And the best thing about it for me is you just get to meet so many new people when you're actually doing it. So many characters that I've met kind of over the years, that's one of the big things about it. So it doesn't really matter to me what their ability is. As long as they leave and they've enjoyed it and hopefully they'll improve, that's my thing.
Not just coaching videos, though, on your YouTube website. A lot of sort of travelogues and that sort of stuff as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So I do a number of... The basis of the channel is very much about improvement and enjoyment. So the improvement, all the coaching, all the playing, but then the enjoyment of actually travelling to different places and seeing so many things which only 5 years ago only could have dreamed of, since I started. So that side of things is definitely something I'm going to push a little bit more because it helps me create really good content and it gives me a great excuse to go travel.
Why not?
Well, exactly. Call it a job, yeah.
Okay, well, this is going to be completely FOC. This is going to be free of charge here, Pete, no doubt. So I want you to give us a tip for the AMs out there listening, apart from don't stand too close to it after you've hit it,
okay,
I want you to give them a nice big free tip for nothing. What's a sort of a standard, a sort of par the right word? A normal tip that you would come up for, but for people that are just beginning to start playing golf?
I would say learn and understand how to use the club face and actually what that means. So I get so many people in for lessons who want to talk about swing dynamics, who want to talk about their overarching technique, when underpinning all of that is a poor club face position, which is then causing problems within the swing. So actually understanding how to grip it, how to use the club face effectively, that is so important. But it's also quite hard to do. I mean, you'll know.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, everyone knows like changing a grip is horrendous. So everyone doesn't want to do it, but that is generally the basis.
And you got that for nothing.
Yeah, I know.
Danny.
I know.
That's a freebie.
I know.
Well, what do you say?
Thanks very much. Listen. I've done this show. Obviously, yeah. I'm sort of third reserve when it comes to presenter. I've done this show for 6-7 years or something like that. And that's the first sensible tip that I've ever had. It's the first tip, full stop. And every single time that I come in with yourself and your peers, former golfers, you don't give me anything like that.
No, but it'll be very hard, you see, because I'm not into teaching like Peter. Mm. So if you said to me, what's the club face?
You don't know.
Learn to do it with the club face. Oh, I said, well, it gets in the air. So that's why it's got loft on it.
When we talk golf, leave you out. Ryan Fox winning his first European Tour title following a 3-2 victory over Adrian Ortegi in the final of the ISPS Hand World Super 6 Perth. That's what we're here to talk about first and foremost. Long time coming, in many respects, because he's gone close previously. I always had him down as a bit of a streaky player. He went close to winning in Ireland last year, and he clumps together these sort of top 10s, top 15s, and he always thought he was on the brink, and then he'd fall away for a couple of months, you didn't see him, but I'm pleased he's got a win.
He has, yes. I think the answer to that's yes, but we'll have to elaborate on that. Those Rolex events, he liked a Rolex event last year. I think he had three top tens on the spin, I think, in the Rolex events. And trust me, if you're going to earn a nice few shekels, he always hates it when I talk about money, Pete. But
that's because I haven't got any.
Well, no. None of us have. Pete has, but we haven't. No, you're right. He was always going to be fairly close. He's done some commentary with us in Sky. He's a really nice bloke. You know, comes from a good sporting family. His father was, played rugby for New Zealand. Captain, I believe, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think
so.
Was.
Yeah, he was captain, yeah. So it has been coming. And that golf course out there in Australia, can't remember the name of it. I'm going to get it right now. Lake Kirin, yeah?
Yeah.
It was probably quite close to his heart. I imagine he's played quite a lot of golf there.
So one or two Twitter clips of Ryan weightlifting. Mm. Is that something you recommend as a golfer? Does it depend on the weight or?
I think
he looked like he was, you know, I don't know what the...
He's a strong bloke.
Yeah, I don't know what the phrase is, but he was lifting some heavy weights anyway.
Oh, he's stacked, yeah. Yeah, it suits his swing, though. I think there's a lot of players.
Yeah.
If you are going to do, I would recommend weight training. I'd recommend training anyway, but you just got to understand exactly what you're training and why. I get people in for lessons who are absolutely ripped, who can't move. And it's just
because they're muscle bound.
Yeah, almost. Like
I know the feeling, but anyway,
I didn't want to look at you in the eye when I said that, just in case you thought I was speaking about
you looking
it.
Over.
But yeah, I mean, players like him, players like Brooks Koepka, you know, these guys who understand how to use weight training effectively, and certainly Ryan, he just absolutely rips it. I mean, I've seen him hit a few balls before, and it's just awesome.
Long, isn't he? He's long. Crikey,
yeah,
he's long.
It's that one where you look away.
And it's still going.
And you look back. Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, he is long.
Well, the New Zealander finished 8-under par after 54 holes of stroke play to earn a bye into the last 16 of the 6-hole knockout stages. He had to come through 25 holes on Sunday to lift the trophy. He needed 3 trips to the shootout hole to beat Jazz Janawatanand before claiming 1-up triumphs over Norwegian Christopher Wrighton and Ireland's Paul Don. Fox then went 3-up against Ortegi in the final, and victory was his when both players parred the fourth in the third place playoff match. Paul Don saw off Scott Vincent. The final was over almost too quickly, Boxy, wasn't it? I mean, it was an easy win in the end after struggles earlier.
Well, it's not even a sprint, is it? I mean, it's a step, 6 holes, really, if you know what I mean. You know, if you play 18 holes match play, if you go 2-up pretty early on, it is 9 times out of 10 quite hard to get that back. You know, in 6 holes, he wins the first 3. He's 3-up with 3 to go. He's only got a half of the fourth, which is what he did. But you know, when it gets to match play, you could be level par for all those matches you play, those 6-hole matches, and still win. You know, some people can be 4 or 5 under par and get knocked out.
Do you like the format, Pete?
I do like the format. I think it is right that match play events, certainly when... What I've found is that certainly the players like to play more match play. People like to watch more match play. So to get more match play events on the tour is, I think, going to be key. The only issue is, like Richard just said there, you can get really good players playing really well and getting knocked out. So I think that's a little bit of the hesitancy about getting more match play events, is that if you've got a Rory McIlroy in the first round who gets knocked out by someone who fans maybe don't root for as much, then maybe people...
Which happens
don't.
A lot.
That's always been the issue, hasn't it, with the WGC match play? Well, in its previous guise, when it was just straight knockout and then it morphed into groups because fans want to see the star names for more than just 100%. One day. And it's difficult to try and get that right. I mean, here, for this Australian event, you've got that stroke play element to start with.
Does that
solve a bit of the problem or not?
No, well, I'll tell you another thing about the stroke play. Unless it's changed this year, and I've looked deep into the internet, as my producer Matt knows, I'm trying to find out what's going on. But
I thought you said you struggled with like the internet and stuff.
I can get on that.
Oh, okay.
I can get on that.
Yeah.
Have you found the way I'll present?
have you found the delete history button yet?
No, I don't. Is that a channel? I'll show you that.
Let me help you. It's probably the most important thing you can find.
Is it? He's put me off now with what I was going to say. What was I going to say? Oh, yeah, stroke play. No, it's 54 holes, but there's no money in it. He laughs again as I bring up money. But, you know, as I've said in the past, money isn't everything, but it's right up there with oxygen, as you well know. Now,
you're going to get some money for being in the final however many.
No, what you're getting is by shooting 8, 9, 10 under for 54 holes, maybe a bit more. What they're doing is they're saying, we're guaranteeing you 24th spot.
Is that not good enough?
No. In my view, this is only in my view, for what it's worth, and everyone's got an opinion, if you know what I mean, is I think it should be 36 holes, and then it should go into 32.
Yeah.
And then those 30...
So what you're suggesting, in a regular event, you should like give the third round leader some more money or something?
Well, you don't normally have unless it goes rain delayed and it goes into the third day. You've got to remember the expense of these players. It's quite a lot of money to play.
There is a running theme, Pete, with boxing on the on the podcast. It's difficult to get right, isn't it? I mean, I always think six holes seems too short, but obviously if you've got 54-hole match play, you can't play forever. I don't mind it. I think there's good jeopardy on Saturday. I watched it on Saturday and thought, you know, when players were trying to get in to try and make Sunday's play, it made the final few holes of Saturday for a good couple of hours when players were jostling for position, well worth watching.
I think that maybe says it, though, when you said you don't mind it. Like, these events, and if they want to succeed, you've got to be looking back at these events going, you know what, that was awesome.
Yeah, that was really true.
And I think that'll, in fairness, that'll only happen. I know, obviously, this is one of the only events like this on tour, but if this format is then transplanted into an event which more of the bigger name players are going to play in, maybe that would then get a little bit more attention as well. Because at the end of the day, you know, course there looked fantastic and the field was pretty strong, but certainly for Western viewers, it was the middle of night.
Yeah.
You know, it's tough to watch, it's tough to get into. So transporting this type of format into one of the bigger events, I'm not saying Rolex series events, but one of the bigger events, that could work really well.
Yeah, I mean, it's like anything, it needs a bit of history to it, doesn't
it? Yeah,
to start building it up. But no, I think it's great. Listen, anything that's a little bit different still comes out with an eventual winner like this.
Well, we see more and more different events on the European tour, don't we? And things get tweaked every single year and some things don't work. And yeah, I mean, you're right to point that out. And it's difficult to get something that hits the ground running. And when things get tweaked, a little bit like the WGC when it went just from straight knockout to groups, so we saw a little bit more of the players.
Yeah.
Look, I don't want to say it's a work in progress because it's a full tournament on the European tour. It is enjoyable. And the fact that it's retained its place on the tour means that I would imagine those in power quite like it.
Yeah, no, it does. It works fine. It was the first time. When was it? The first time last year.
Yeah.
When
was
Happy Barnrat? Happy Barnrat was the
year
first
before
one.
No, it was the Australian.
The
Australian, been around for a long time.
Yes.
Really good guy, friend of the show.
Good friend of mine.
Personal
friend Wayne
of yours.
42 years of age. Brett Rumford.
Brett Rumford. Thanks for the producer for that one, I presume.
No, it wasn't.
Did you get that yourself?
That was muscle memory, was it?
Nothing
to do with him. Nothing to do with Matt. He's a good man. He's only 30, but he's a good man.
Incidentally, some numbers about Ryan Fox's victory. His 79th European Tour event makes him the first winner from New Zealand since Danny Lee won the 2000. 2009 Johnny Walker Classic as an amateur. After wins on the European Challenge Tour in 15 and 16, he burst onto the European Tour scene in the summer of 2017. You mentioned those Rolex Series good finishes, three consecutive top tens. He lost out in a playoff at the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open hosted by the Rory Foundation last season. That was to Russell Knox, who played brilliantly. And I felt that Ryan Fox didn't throw that one away. It's just that he got beaten by the better man down the stretch. Now, he's the son, and we mentioned this earlier, a former Rugby Union World Cup winner, Grant Fox, grandson of former New Zealand cricket captain Merv Wallace. Is there more pressure on him, do you think, Pete? Because he's, you know, famous son, and I know it's a different sport, but there's always focus on him. Whenever we've talked about him on the pod, whenever you see him reported in the newspaper, he is son of, there's more of a spotlight on him, isn't there?
I think it'd be more of a more of an issue for him, if that's the right way to put it, if it was in rugby, or if it was in cricket, because then you do get a direct comparison. You can pull up video footage. Like, it doesn't make very much sense for him to tramline a 30-footer and then pull up footage of someone scoring a try. Yeah, there's not really a direct comparison there. So I think that would be more of an issue. But I think it, for him, it's an advantage, surely, coming from a family of sporting excellence. You know, he can learn from those people. You know, that's got to be an advantage for him.
Let's hear from the champion, who says he was pleased to survive all the final day drama.
Been a tough day. I think I went down the last and all bar the final, and the conditions were pretty brutal again, and it was pretty tough yesterday as well. So I'm very happy to be standing here.
And a really dominant win in that final. Just what clicked in that final game to clinch it?
I just felt really calm. I think I was a bit quick early, in the quarter and the semi, and got away with it. And I guess I had a bit more of a chance to just sit down and take stock of things after the semi. I literally walked straight from the 18th to the tee in the previous matches, and it was nice to just relax and get focused for the final. And Adrian helped me out on a couple of holes, but I felt really in control of things out there, and it was nice to hold a couple of putts that mattered and I guess make it fairly easy in the end.
And is it difficult to switch your mentality from stroke play to match play, or didn't you find a problem with that?
I always enjoyed match play as an amateur. I had a pretty decent record playing for Auckland in the Interprovincial, and I grew up playing team sport, so it's kind of what I guess I played a lot, like 15, 20 years of team sport, so you get used to just trying to beat someone, and I quite like that, and it's a bit different than trying to beat the golf course, and it wasn't too hard a switch in the end, and I guess it's nice having the added bonus if you hit a bad shot. You're only losing a hole, although losing a hole in a six hole match is a little harder than an 18 hole match, but it's not like coming down the stretch where if you make a double or a triple, you're out of the tournament. So it's a little bit of a freer format.
Ryan Fox, winner on the European Tour for the first time, and I suspect, Boxy, it won't be for the last time.
Wouldn't have thought so. No, he's a pretty sound, solid player. I think you were saying, or were you saying, Pete, he's quite a streaky sort of player?
Yeah, I was saying that. Looking at some of his results.
Yeah, he is quite a streaky player, but he's... the thing about it is he probably played OK. He was talking about the drama and getting through. What he did do is he putted really well, and if you putt well, my goodness, that makes a difference.
Yeah, you see, it's interesting that you say putting well, because when we look at the strokes gained stats, and I'm a huge fan of this. And Robert Lee doesn't. Well, are you strokes gained fan?
Not really.
Not really. No, it's old school. So I'm bordering on new and old.
You like it?
I love it.
Yeah. Because it's...
Talk me through it then.
Because it is the best metric, isn't it?
It's the most accurate measure of performance against the field in that week, yeah.
So strokes gained tee to green...
7.6.
So he gained 7.6 strokes on the field, and he was top of that ranking. Strokes gained long, Pete. I'm not quite sure what that means, because I've seen strokes gained off the tee and tee to green and approach. What does long mean? Do we think it means off the tee?
Strokes gained, he smashes it, yeah. I think that's probably the more accurate description.
So he gets 6.7, that's second. And strokes gained approach, 5.1, second in the stats as well. But when it came to putting, we were just talking off air, and he was down in the flat stats when it comes strokes gained.
Yeah, so I think he was last strokes gained as far as the people who qualified for the match play. He was the worst putter out of them. But it's just, that's indicative of the modern game.
Was he worse putter in the 54 holes? Or was
not
he
in
worse
the 54.
No.
He was the worst putter out of the people who got through. But I think he was averaging like 32 putts around almost, which is obviously not great. But he hits it so far, and he hits that many greens when he's playing well.
This is the point, isn't it?
That's the advantage.
That's where he's picking up his shots.
Yeah.
Not on green. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're putting badly
with strokes gained.
It just means that your approaches to the green are leaving you a lot shorter putts more often, and therefore they are more makeable putts statistically, and therefore you're not going to show up as much on the strokes gained statistical standings for putting. You got that one, Boxy?
No, that's as clear, that is absolutely as clear as mud. That. I mean, that's absolutely fantastic.
Doesn't mean you're a bad putter if you're low on the strokes.
Listen, I think if you're 6 under 2s or 8 under 2s for putting, you've done quite well in a round, trust me.
This strokes game, I mean, I love it, strokes game. There are a good couple of websites that you can follow, and it will suggest which players are playing better on strokes gained, and generally it's always the players towards the top. You can putt really well, but you could be way down. Last 2 or 3 years it's come out on tour. I think it's fantastic.
But when you say putt well, if you're putting well, you're knocking them in. That's in my game.
Yeah, but you might not be playing well. You might be knocking in, 40, 50 footers. I mean, you are gaining strokes against the field by putting, by doing that.
Right.
But you're not playing particularly well, in my eyes.
So if you're up and down, so if you're not hitting greens in regulation and up and downing it, knocking it in from 10 feet all the time, you are going to be number one in putting, even though you're not playing very well.
Yeah, your strokes gained as part of that would be really high.
Yeah.
You wouldn't win anything. So your strokes gained in approach would be right down.
Right.
It's always better being the other way.
Yeah.
And you know the other thing, Pete, is you will always get, now these stats come around, you'll always get Danny at a cocktail party. You know that, don't you? He'll be the one that says, do you know the strokes gain? You go, excuse me, I'll be back in 14 years.
When's the last time you went to a cocktail party, Boxy?
Well,
I thought you were watching John Wick last night.
I did actually. No, I did watch that last night after I'd had a bit of a cocktail party.
For one, possibly two.
No, okay. It was for one.
Give us a price of your John Wick. Strokes gained, what would you say? First?
I would say he was miles ahead.
Yeah, he's pretty strong in all categories.
This is Keanu Reeves. You're a big fan, aren't you?
Yeah, no, I'd never seen him before. I looked in the what's on the tip.
There was the LA Open, there was replays. Yeah, everything was on. Do you know what? It's a John Wick night.
I tell you what, do you want to watch the Genesis? It's a John Wick night for me. Oh, dearie, dearie.
What was the film about?
Well, actually, you're not going to believe this, but he was a retired assassin. Okay. he was a retired assassin, minding his own business. He'd buried all his guns and everything under a concrete floor, and he'd given up. And then some Russian burglars come in and then start messing around with him and kill his dog, right, which was a present from his wife that got killed. And they hit him with pipes and everything like that.
Yeah.
And
his main idea
is revenge. And he kept saying all the way through, you killed my dog. Mm. And they said, yeah, but it's the dog. He said, no, not having that. Anyway, he wiped a few out. And he was quite handy with the old pistol.
I mean, I've got a dog this last year. And if someone killed that dog, I'd go full John Wick as well, I think.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. Would you? What dog have you got?
King Charles. Well, it's meant to be a King Charles Cavalier.
Right.
But we got a King Charles Cavalier because our friends have got one. It's a nice sedate lap dog.
Yeah.
Now, I think the mum might have snuck out a couple of nights because we have not got a Chincock King Charles Cavalier.
Chincock, you nearly said. Yeah. That was close. I've never heard of one of those before.
We've got pretty much a new breed, and he's not settled down at all. He has more energy than John Wick.
Does he?
Thanks for that review of John Wick.
That's all right. We don't know whether Matt... Is he going to keep Matt in or
I think
not?
This could be a new segment, by the way.
I think I mean, much more detailed than your review of the actual golf. Speaking of the golf, let's hear from the runner-up, shall we? Adrian Ortegi.
Obviously, a little bit disappointed after losing the final, but as you said, it's been a good week. Second is a solid week. What I felt is that I went like from low to up during the week, so that's good as well. That's a good feeling. And yeah, as you said, it was a good day all day today. Played very good golf. The first four games, just nothing went the way I wanted at the end, but still happy.
Now, it says in my script here, yes. Boxy,
yes,
that Ortegi's two European Tour wins have come in match play events, but you took umbrage to that, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Well, yes, he's won the Paul Laurie match play.
Yeah.
He was two down with five to go against Marcel Siem in Germany.
Yeah.
And two out of five to play, never wins. I know what I'd rather be. Anyway, he went on and beat Marcel Siem, won the next four holes, mm-hmm. won 2-1.
Mm-hmm.
And then he won the Belgian knockout, which is medal match play.
Okay.
So in other words, you carry on right to the very end.
I see.
You know, if it's 3-2, you'd like to want to have a bye and a press and all that kind of stuff, but you don't. You walk in with a medal match play, you keep going right to the end.
Is this just coincidence that he's good at match play, do you think, Pink? He's a good player, isn't he? We're saying that this guy's a match play specialist, but...
He's just a good player. You know what, I've seen him play, and he is so unbelievably steady. He's such a good player. I really think that kind of maybe this year, maybe the year after, you know, he will have a breakthrough year, definitely.
Maybe the temperament for match play, maybe that's why he's won a couple of them.
No, I personally don't think so. I've watched him a lot. I commentate him a lot on the TV. He is, like Pete says, he is a very good player. And it is a bit of a coincidence he's won two match play events. But he still secretly would like to whack a 72-hole stroke play under his belt, wouldn't he?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, that's what he'd like to
do. Don't want to be known as someone who's just good at match play. You want to be known as someone who can win in any kind of format. And he's definitely got the game for it. I think stuff like this will just give him more confidence. That's the one thing which I seem to see about him. He just lacks that maybe touch of self-belief because he's got everything that you can want.
Good player. And another good Spaniard, and I know I've mentioned him before, is Jorge Campillo.
Oh, yeah.
He's gonna win a tournament very soon, and that, a lot of my Sky mates say you say that every week. Yes, I do, because I do believe he will do. Yeah.
And the relevance of that comment for this particular section of the show,
absolutely zero. I've actually just seen our producer's eyes go as wide as the bottom of Coke bottles. There are other soft drinks you can get, but it goes wide as those bottles. Yeah. And
any other random player you want to mention?
What's this? No, you move on. I'll have a little think about that.
Well, Ategi beat Australian Daniel Gale 2 up in round one and then saw off top seed pair Langfors 2-1 before a 2-up victory over home favourite Min Woo Lee, then beat Scott Vincent 3-2 in the semi-finals. Let's move on to Paul Dunn, who, of course, finished third and had this to say.
Six holes are so short, anything can happen. And, like, it's... Normally match play momentum is so important, but in six holes you can't even get momentum, you know. It's a matter of throwing shocks in people's faces and seeing how you react to it. So that was a shock for me on the 17th, but I played nicely all week. Third is pretty good, but given the circumstances, probably a couple better would have been nice, you know.
Went to extra holes, Paul Dunn managing to grab third place. We were talking about golfers' fitness. Paul Dunn's body shape's changed quite a bit, hasn't it, over the last few years?
Yeah, his legs, compared to the size of his body, are a little bit worrying. Like, he is standing on trunks.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, is it? If
you look at his legs, he's, like, just weirdly stacked in his lower half, because he's not a big guy, so he needs to draw his power up from anything other than width.
He's a little opposite to me, then. I mean, I'm not quite stacked, you know, below the waist, am I really? But, sorry about that. No.
I didn't know what kind of podcast we were going to get here, but... he's just absolutely ripped in his lower half, and he hits it like surprisingly far for like the size of him. And he obviously pays a lot of attention to his fitness and his working out. But you know, there's not really that many pros who don't do that now, really.
No, they all do it. I've said to him, it's another one I've said before. But you know, in the days of when Dan and I were playing, or when he was playing his amateur golf, the gym, I mean, that was used to be a man's name. Mm. You know what I mean? Now it's just part of the. You know, they've got a chef, they've got a, not all of them, but you know, you've got a chef, you've got a trainer, you've got a psychologist. I mean, it's all kinds of things get involved with it nowadays. Dan, over to you.
Sorry, I drifted off.
I just started running out of things to say.
Then. Other talking points is the headline for the next section.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is it?
Strange enough, John Wick is not in this one. Thomas Peters, who was tipped up all over the place and was probably the star name, managed to make it through to the match play but was knocked out in the first round by Australian Min Woo Lee. Why did Thomas Peters play, and it's good to see him play in Perth, rather than play on the PGA Tour? I'm glad he did, but well previously on
Listen, I think you sit there with your manager, if you have a manager, which Thomas Peters will have, you start looking at your schedule in about... sort of October, November time, you start looking, you go, right, what am I going to play in next year? What am I, you know, I know I'm exempt, I know I'm this, I know I'm that, where can I go, what can I do? And this was obviously, his idea was to have 2 weeks. He played the Vic Open as well, didn't he? I'm just going to have a check.
I don't think he did. In fact, he didn't. He just went for one Australian event. Yeah.
Right, okay, I thought he
That's
might.
Why I'm highlighting it.
Yeah, well, I thought
if he went for both, I might not have mentioned it.
Well, but, you know, you never know, you know, I don't know why. Well, maybe there was some persuasion to go down there, I don't know.
Yeah. Friends and family down there, perhaps.
It could have been that. But
he does enjoy match play, likes Australia as well, I'm being reliably informed.
Is that from our producer? Is he yeah, shouting that in your ears?
Well, someone's trying to keep the show on the road, and it's not John Wick.
No, he's got a thing, Pete, isn't he?
I know.
About this John Wick. Oh, which I'd never
Thomas Peters
it.
Getting back to his best. Do you think he had a bit of a dip, didn't he, after the Ryder Cup?
Yeah, it's a funny one, isn't it? Because on the face of it, he does have absolutely everything. Like, he swings amazing, technique-wise. He's got every facet of the game covered. But I don't know, it doesn't seem to quite have kicked on as many people would have expected. But listen, there's so many good players out there now. And it's hard to shine in a field of so many stars, if that doesn't sound too philosophical.
Fine, no, it's not. Listen, he's had 4 wins already on the European Tour, exactly, Thomas Peters, you know, and he's not even 30 yet. I mean, that's still, for most people, that is a fantastic career.
Yeah.
Let alone, you know, they're just early on in their career.
I think it's a sign of how good he is that people have that expectation of him.
Yeah.
Sweden's Per Langfors, as we mentioned, led after 54 holes, 10 under, but lost in the second round. That's what can happen with match play. Boxing, we need the top 10 from the ISPS Handa World Super 6 Perth. Not quite sure how you're going to do the top 10 because it's match play, but
it is match play. I'll start off with... Remember that from... Pete won't remember that, will he? The radio?
Nope.
You, actually, you're
it.
Looking at me like you don't remember it. Do you?
What is it? Do it again. Just do it again.
No, I can't do it again. I've done it once. I will give you the top 10, okay? Brad Kennedy was 10th. Per Langfors was 9th. 4 players at 5th. Christopher Reitan, Gareth Pedersen, Min-Woo Lee and Benjamin Campbell. 4th was Scott Vincent, losing to Paul Dunn, who finished 3rd. 2nd was Adrian Otegi. And 1st, the winner was Ryan Fox.
Valentine's Day for the first round.
Oh,
last week.
Oh God, do you know? I thought you were going to say something. Did you get it in the post or something? Valentine's Day. You haven't said anything yet, Richard. I mean, crikey.
You thought crikey.
How excited was I then? Did you see that look across?
Yeah,
there,
and I sensed it.
Do you know what? Your look though was like, crikey, I've forgotten again.
Valentine's Day. Week. Oh, was it?
For the first round, did you see Brandon Stone, winner of the Scottish Open last year?
Yeah. No. What did he do?
He was at the cricket.
Okay.
And with a cardboard note saying, the wife thinks I'm buying flowers and chockies.
No, is that what did he? Yeah. Did he?
If he wants to try and swerve Valentine's Day, to hold that up to the television at the cricket is not the thing to do. What did you do for Valentine's Day last week, Richard?
I'll tell you what I did.
Go on.
I created a...
It sounds special.
Nothing like your thinking. I created... Your face. I created a fondue, which was a couple of sirloin steaks cut up into cubes.
Oh, yeah.
It's the old 70s, 80s way of cooking, where you put it on a skewer at the end in boiling oil.
Is that fondue, is it?
A few jockeys whips laid about, which is chips.
A few jockeys, yeah.
Jockeys laid about, and 3 or 4 dishes that I got from a certain supermarket down the road from me.
Excellent.
And a couple of, you know, vinos or Carni Cokes or whatever. Mm-hmm. There are other rums you can get. But
Pete, what did you get up to?
Went for a few days away with the missus. I wasn't stupid about this. So I started going out with my girlfriend at the time on Valentine's Day.
Did you?
Nice.
Yeah. Proposed on Valentine's
Day. So you've got your ducks in a row there, haven't you? All the anniversaries on the same day.
It's the
nailed
one thing.
It.
I just can't
absolutely
forget.
Absolutely nailed it.
The only other anniversary I can remember is my dad's birthday, and that's on bonfire night. So as long as everyone I know has something special occurring on a day where something else is happening, I'm fine.
I took my good lady to Milan.
Told you, cocktail party.
I took my lady to Milan for a few days, do a bit of shopping. In the airport, who did I bump into? Robert Lee and Ewan Murray on their way to Los Angeles.
Oh, Heathrow, obviously.
I said, oh, what are you up to, Dan? So I'm just taking my good lady. We did a little bit of shopping to Milan, and I was just checking the departure boards to see when the gate was opening. And Rob says, I think she started already. So I turned around. Where was she going in? The Rolex shop.
Oh,
you can stop that straight away. We've not even got outside of the airport. She's at the Rolex shop. Anyway, thanks for that, Rob.
Got a nice one here, then.
Yes, I think swatches
we're,
maybe.
Being cool.
Now then, last week's prediction, speaking of Rob, remember the format, we get 2 picks. One, though, has to be outside of the top 50 in the final 2018 Race 2 Dubai standings. 20 points for a winner, 10 for a top 5, 5 for a top 20, minus 5 for a missed cut. Rob went for Thomas Peters, he did tell me that in the airport, who got 5 points for him, and also Ashley Chesters, who missed the cut, so that's minus 5, so a sum total of 0. Jamie Spence went for Lucas Herbert and Wade Ormsby. Wade, I thought, made it through. He got 0 points. He was 20th. Minus 5. For Lucas. So again, 0 points, minus five and five. And Richard Kaufman went for Jason Scrivener, 0 points. And also another player that Boxy's just going to remind me who it is.
Chikurangapa.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Minus five, missed the cut. So minus five for Richard. So presenters on 75, co-presenters on 10, guests are on minus five. So it's a low bar, isn't it, really?
It is, thing? Yeah. You know, you talk about some of these names from Adrian. Yeah. The one of the real difficult ones I first found was a chap called Pariah Jun Hazavastikal. Did you ever come across that name in your commentary?
No, I didn't.
You need to sort of sort that one out, let me tell you, before you go live with it.
What was his name again?
Pariah.
Yeah.
Jun Hazavastikal.
Where's he from?
He's from Asia somewhere, yeah.
Are you a Fantasy Race 2 Dubai player, Pete?
I'm not, actually, no.
Well, we all should be, and every single time I do this show, which is very rare because I rarely get the call.
You're very good at it, though. He's good at it.
Listen, I think we should start from this week.
Okay.
Boxer, are you going to start? We're going to get you a team.
What have I
got to
do? I've got lots of things I've got to do. Go on, what do you want me to do?
You're not busy today, are you?
I've got a lot to do. Do you want to hear about the rest?
No, I don't.
Just turn your mic to one side.
We're going to start this week, so I'm going to get a team in.
Okay.
And it's the Fantasy Race 2 Dubai game. John McIntyre's J-Mac team tops the global leaderboard, while Alison Hines scored the most points from the World Super 6. I've got no more detail than that. Sorry about that, Alison and J-Mac. If you want to get involved, and I'm getting involved this week, I say it every week, but this time I promise you I've got a little bit of time.
Well, put us in. Put Pete and I in, and we'll join in with you.
Listen, Pete's au fait with anything, you know, post-1983. You struggle with it a little bit. We might have to do your team for you, but we'll sort something out.
If you can do my team for me.
Everyone can get involved. You can start straight away. All you've got to do is head to europeantour.com. We need the latest in the Race 2 Dubai standings. One suspects that the money earned in Australia hasn't made that much of a dent into the top 10. But
well,
I could be wrong.
It has a little bit because we normally do top 10, but I'm not going to start at 11th because last week's winner, Ryan Fox, is now 11th.
Good on him.
Poulter is 10th. Hao Tong Li is 9th. 8th is Joost Luiten. Aaron Rye, very good player, Aaron Rye, he's 7th. David Lipsky, 6th. He won at Leopard Creek earlier on this season. Matt Wallace is 5th. 4th is Louis Oosthuizen. Bryson DeChambeau is 3rd. 2nd is Richard Sterney. And the winner in Abu Dhabi, Shane Lowry, still leads the way. That was a Rolex event, Abu Dhabi, though. Hence the amount of points.
You mentioned Aaron Rye. Wears two gloves. What's the situation with two? Is that something that you'd recommend, Peter?
It certainly works for him.
It does work for him, doesn't it?
Well, he's actually coached by Andy and Piers from Me and My Golf, who are also another YouTube channel and on social media. And it's very interesting, actually, with Aaron Rye. He is an incredibly individual character. Like, he literally does not care what anyone else thinks. He'll do things his own way, and whatever works for him will work. So he started wearing two gloves. Seemed to work. Stuck with it. He has iron covers on his irons.
Yeah.
And in the professional game, that is very much frowned upon, I believe. That's very faux pas. But he doesn't care.
If it works for him, why not?
I asked him in Morocco last year, you know, about the gloves, and he started off when he was young, and it just worked. He just stuck with it. He just played it right, like Pete was saying, and, you know, and he just stuck with it and stuck with it.
Tommy Gainey used to play with two gloves on the PGA Tour.
Yes, he did. Mm. Correct and right. You're through to the next round.
Yeah, indeed.
The cocktail man has arrived.
While we've got you on idiosyncrasies, your thoughts on Bryson DeChambeau?
Bryson?
Yeah.
Oh, I love him. Not as a person, I don't know him.
If someone came to you and said, look, I've seen Bryson on telly, I've heard about him, he plays a certain way, can you teach me that way? Would you say, yes, I can, or no, I can't? Or would you point out how would you go about it? What would you do?
It's not the way that I would particularly coach. He is very, the golfing machine book brought out kind of a number of years ago now, he's very much based on the science and the basis of that, of biomechanical movements and exactly what works for him and the way that he analyzes it, the way that he goes through it. I mean, there's only so many players that would go out on a golf course with a water spritzer to simulate dew. There's only so many players. This is what got me out on the, I can't remember what tournament it was a few weeks ago, but he had a launch monitor, a GC Quad, which is a massively advanced piece of technology, takes hundreds of pictures at the point of impact, exactly where it's hitting on the face, gives you all the readings, all the spin data, everything you could ever need. Saw him on the range with that. Then the very next day, he had a phantom camera, which records at like 40,000 frames a second, focused on the point of impact because he didn't trust what the GC Quad was actually showing him. So he was analysing both of those to exactly pinpoint strike location. Now, if you imagine, like, next to him, I don't know, Appy Barnrat warming up, like, can you imagine him doing any of this?
No,
exactly. What I like about him is the fact that he's just so different. You know, in this modern age of generally quite vanilla golf pros, at least he's coming out and doing something different. At least he's a discussion point to actually talk about.
Well,
and
it
that's
is
great.
But the only thing is, we don't know what he's actually trying to do. That's the difficult thing about it. But he, you know, he's a little bit in a way. You talk about, you know, Harrington, not on as great a scale, but Patrick Harrington used to be like that. You know, he'd test everything out. We had range balls when we used to play, and especially I remember once we played the Irish Open and we went over there and he's got Dave McNeely down the range, but he's using his own balls because he knows the compression of his own golf ball and wants to see how far that wedge goes, how far a gap wedge goes. You know, everybody else is just clipping balls off, but that's probably why he tucked all those majors under his belt and we didn't.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting, actually. Harrington's an unusual case in the sense that he's very analytical, experiments with everything. But he moves on from different swings to different swings to different techniques to different techniques. Bryson DeChambeau is very much focused on perfecting his particular version of the golf swing and does everything he can to do that. So it's same, again, very similar mindset as far as being analytical, very different approach to the golf swing. And it's great. It just shows that there's so many different ways to actually swing a club and be successful. It's brilliant. It's one of the best things about golf in respect to other sports is the individual nature of it and how you can get the job done with seemingly bonkers ideas.
Yeah.
Major winner this year, next year, sooner rather than DeChambeau, later.
Yeah. I would say so, yeah. The only thing I would say that with him, if things slightly go wrong and toys do start falling out of the cot, it's a question of whether he can keep his head or not. Because I think, you know, it's like anything. When things are going well, my God, it's really easy to carry on and keep doing it. But when things go wrong, that's when you see how really strong mentally the players are.
Yeah, he does seem to have a high implosion point, doesn't he? Where he just goes inward on himself.
Does he take too long to play?
Yes.
Yes.
But he quickened it up, you know.
He did, yeah. He did.
Other week.
It's one of those things where you like look at players like that, and JB Holmes certainly yesterday.
Yeah, he's another.
Just painful like to watch as a viewer. Yeah. But he won. So it's very hard to then go to that player to say, listen, I think you need to speed up. He can turn around and say, well, actually, I've just banked $1.5 million taking 2 minutes over a putt, so I'm all right, thanks.
But if players know they're not going to get penalised, if they're not going to get shots taken off them, it's not going to change.
That's the key. The key
is shots. It's not money.
Not money, yeah.
Money, it's like a cup of tea and a biscuit.
We'll talk a little bit about JB Holmes' win a little bit later on. Let me just rattle through one or two other points of order that we've got. We've all got a bit serious all of a sudden.
No, let's loosen it up.
Your fault, Boxy. Okay. Anyway, this is more serious stuff. The European Tour has announced significant increases in prize money. I told you it was serious, Boxy.
Yeah.
As well as changes to the Race to Dubai points and field sizes for the final three events of the season. Get ready for these numbers. Season-ending DP World Tour Championship in November will now see the winner pocket $3 million, up significantly from the $1.33 million won by Danny Willett last year, with positions on the Race to Dubai now determined on points. These will also rise significantly, with a total number available at each tournament being 9,000 at the Turkish Airlines Open, up from 7,000, 10,000 at the Nedbank, that's up from 7,500, and 12,000 at the DP World Tour Championship, up from 8,000. In addition, the field sizes for the final three events of this season have been revised and reduced to show a clear progression from event to event, with a leading 70 players from the Race to Dubai playing in Turkey, then 60 South Africa and 50 lining up in Dubai. Mr. Boxall, thoughts on those numbers?
I think it's a great idea. I think it's an excellent idea. And if you've got a... If you look at the last tournament where there's 50 players in it, you've got, the first prize goes... In the first tournament, it's $2 million. Then it's $2.5 million. This is all dollars, and then it's $3 million in the final one. So, take the last event, which is going to be $8 million. You're then playing. The rest of the field are playing for $5 million with the first prize of $5 million, which is 16.6%. Okay, so you're still looking at about 800,000, and it'll also show. It'll show to me if that doesn't pull the players in, proper players, then nothing will.
I mean, this is what it's designed to do, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's to make sure that we get the best possible field, and no one wants to.
It'll be very disappointing if that doesn't happen.
Yeah, and it is. Listen, if you're putting that amount of money up for grabs, that will attract attention of the players. There's no doubt about it. And the way that the season is structured now, with the change of the major WGCs, I potentially think this could be amazing for the European Tour, but there's only...
Because the timing looks right in the calendar now,
precisely,
doesn't it?
Precisely, yeah. Yeah, players can look at that and actually spread the season out how they want to now. But
no excuse
exactly,
not to play.
Exactly, and the proof's going to be in the pudding. You know, if it works, then fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, back to the American action, the PGA Tour. We talked about J.B. Holmes briefly. He edged out fellow American Justin Thomas by a shot to win his fifth PGA Tour title at the Genesis Open. With most players having to finish two rounds on Sunday, it was a world number four who faltered, blowing a four-shot lead. While Boxy was watching John Wick, myself and Peter were head down watching the golf. down watching the golf. I'm not quite sure what happened to Justin Thomas. He had a shocking back nine, front nine, and even worse, back nine, didn't he, really?
Yeah, I mean, in all fairness, you can probably suggest that this was a bit of a blip, because his record when he's been kind of
it's good, isn't it?
It's really good. And the fact is that when the wind was blowing, like, that course is tough. It's a hard, and he wasn't driving well. I think he hit, like, two out of 14 fairways, whatever it was. So, you know, when you do that, you're not going to win, especially around a course like that, which is tight and difficult and windy. So you can put it down to as a bit of a blip. I don't think we should be overly concerned by Thomas. Maybe a little bit more concerned by Spieth, but...
Yeah. I mean, he led...
What was Spieth? 81 last round.
But he led... Go back to strokes gained here. He led after round one. I looked at his stats and they were fantastic. He was striking the ball so well, creating chance after chance, not sinking every single one. His strokes gained tee to green, I think, was the best for the first round. And then... I don't know what happened.
It's psychological. You get something. You have so much time. This 6 inches of grey matter between your ear holes. You have so much time to think. It's such a wicked game. It can play terrible games with your mind. And you only want one thing to go wrong. And you think, well, where did that come from? You know what it's like as a pro. You play it and you think everything's going along smoothly, automatic pilot, and all of a sudden somebody turns the automatic pilot off, something goes wrong, and you go, oh no.
Yeah.
What type of player is Jordan Spieth? I've heard a theory suggesting that, you know, there's an awful lot of natural talent there, and he might not be sure exactly how he's got to the top of the game. So when it starts to go wrong, he doesn't know which elements to work on to change. I don't know if that's true or not.
Well, I think that was something that he said. He said when he rose to the top of the game very quickly, bagged quite a few majors very quickly. And I think he was saying that he wasn't actually quite sure how he managed it, like how he managed to put his swing together, how he managed to put so incredibly well during that, certainly that one season where he just held absolutely everything from 15 to 25 foot, whatever it was. But at the same time, you could look at that and say, well, why do you need to think about it so much? You know, you got to be able to say, listen, I'm one of the best players in the world. I've risen there by being very talented, by working very hard. Let's just continue on. There's no need to delve too deeply into it. But, you know, he's obviously going through some mental challenges at the moment. You can see that on the course. I think it was in the coverage of Sky, he was, I think, 125 yards out, and he was complaining to his caddy about what a bad number it was. Now, if you're a top pro and you can't find a club to hit 125 yards, that there's nothing technical about that. That's what's going on in your head.
Yeah. I mean, look, yes, exactly right. Montgomery, you won't mind admitting, he didn't have the best swing, but my God, he had the strongest head on tour by a long, long way. I mean, he won, you know, to win seven order of merits as it was in those days, and eight in total is unbelievable. On the trot, I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah, he's with a good coach though. He's with Cameron McCormack, who's very, very good. So he'll turn it around. He's a generational player. He'll be here for a good couple of decades.
I'll tell you a couple of things, Hal Monty. If I can just look at our producer, can I just say this very quickly about Colin Montgomery? Just wait for an answer in my ear. He said absolutely, which is good news. An example
it's
of
not
how
like you to digress, but go on.
No, but is it not? So anyway, just a prime example of what Monty was like in my playing days. Okay. We had to have a Monday finish in the Spanish Open, okay, in Madrid. And Monty was one ahead going to the last round. We go to pay our bill on the Monday morning before we go up to the golf course. And I'm playing with Monty and them. I'm with the group in front of me. He's second last off. He's last off. And we get down there and he says, looking forward to it today, Richie? Looking forward to it, are you? I said, yeah. You know, I was struggling a little bit. I needed the dough, funnily enough. So I said, yes. So he said, yes. And he turned around to Pat Payne's, but he said, do you know, so if you can stay one shot ahead of me today, he said, you'll probably win. And turned around and paid his bill. And I thought, a bit cheeky that. But I finished second, one shot behind Monty. He was absolutely spot on. He birded the last, damn him. But the other thing was, I was walking the course at the German Masters. This is when he was winning his Order of Merits in those days, as it was. And I think this was for about his sixth or his seventh Order of Merit. We're in for the German Masters, and he's walking out to play the Pro-Am shotgun start, and Derek Cooper, a friend of mine, are coming in, and he starts walking towards us, and I said, you're looking forward to your Pro-Am's, and they want to like that messing around, because I've known him since he came out on tour. He said, yeah, and I walked past, and I said, you got to win this week, Monty, then, if you're going to take seventh order of merit, or sixth order of merit, whatever it was. I said, how do you think, do you think you'll do it, Monty? And he sort of laughed and walked across and he went about 10 yards and he went, Boxy. And when I turned around, he went, probably, yes. And did,
yeah. I can imagine it. Just one final one on Joby Holmes, because we touched on it before. He's an incredibly slow player. Was it last year at the Farmers with Alex Norren and the event that Jason Day won? He just took forever. I think it was on the final hole in regulation. And again, watching him last night, and the Sky commentators pointed it out, it's not that he's not ready to take his shot. He's nowhere even near his ball half the time.
No.
I mean, we're talking about the fact that if it works for him and he wins, well, fair enough, but there comes a point where something's got to be done, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's not just the fact that this might be working for him. It's obviously affecting other players. Especially at the Farmers where Norren was, you know, waiting to hit him, there's no doubt that was affecting him. You could see it, the way he was looking around in disbelief at how long he was taking. And certainly at the Genesis, I mean, it was getting to the point where it surely was going to be affecting Justin Thomas, who was playing with Adam Scott. It was three holes, I think, behind, like, the group ahead. Like, that's far too much. But he'll carry on doing that until...
As long as he's allowed to.
As long as he's allowed to, yeah. But the PJ officials have got to come down and say, listen, you can't be taking 2 minutes over a putt. I mean, he plumb-bobbed a putt from 1 foot. Now, I think that should be an automatic two-shot penalty when you do that anyway.
From a foot?
Oh, yeah. If you plumb-bob from a foot, I mean, that's over the edge.
But do you not think, Pete, if... Yeah, it's over the edge, you're right. But do you not think if you start whacking one shots, two shots on it, it won't happen. They'll quicken up.
100%, yeah.
No question.
I mean, the Shot Clock Masters, I mean, obviously, you know, European Tour event. Brilliant. Absolutely fantastic. It shows how long that some of the players take. And if you have a look,
I think there's only two players that week that got done for the clock, I think, wasn't there?
There was two that got done, but it was quicker than any tournament had been. The average time to get round, it was quicker than any time
before. And the scores weren't affected at all, I don't
know. No, because there's a direct penalty for if you are so slow. I mean, someone like Annika Sorensen, she had her pre-shot routine down to 24 seconds. 24 seconds, and she's the best female player who's ever lived. I don't think it's necessary to take 2 minutes over a putt.
Who's the Italian player that just gets on with it very, very quickly?
Renato Paratore.
That's the one. One final point on the PGA Tour, because it was a Monday finish, of course, to the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. We didn't cover it last week. Phil Mickelson recording a fifth win, a record-equaling fifth win in the event. The American had a three-shot lead with two holes to play. Fading light, of course, on the Sunday. We went back on Monday. Paul Casey unable to cut the gap with Mickelson winning by three on 19 under. Casey leading going at the final round, shot 71. I know he won last year? He won on the PGA Tour, was it the year before? I can't remember. But he seems to be getting a reputation here, that getting in very good positions, but just throwing it away.
Listen, he still finished second.
Yes, he did.
I think Phil
still shot 71.
Did shoot 63? I think Mickelson was 63 or 62.
He was low, he was very low.
Yeah, so obviously you could say he went out and won it. But, I mean, Casey, on the positives, he's putting himself in position to have a chance of winning a lot of events, but you don't want him. I'm sure he's the same. You know, he must be scratching his head as far as why he can't seem to get over the line on Sunday. Someone like McIlroy at the moment, you know, consistently finishing in top 15, top 10s, top 5s, but just can't seem to get it done on the Sunday. But, you know, these are great players. They'll figure it out. You know, if they can't figure it out, no one will.
Top 10 in the world, please, Boxer.
Ah, was that from your producer shouting in your ear?
Yes.
Thought he did. Okay, I had it here.
He didn't shout top 10. He shouted the event that Casey won.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, the Valspar.
He did.
Okay. But he came from a mile back.
Let's do the top 10, Dan, shall we, of the official world golf ranking. Francesco Molinari is 10th, Ricky Fowler is 9th, McIlroy is 8th, 7th is Xander Schauffele, John Rahm is 6th, Bryson DeChambeau is 5th, then comes Justin Thomas at 4th, 3rd is Dustin Johnson, 2nd is Brooks Koepka, and Justin Rose flying the flag for us leads the way.
On to this week's event now, and the first of the four annual World Golf Championships, the WGC Mexico Championship at Club de Golf Chapultepec in Mexico City. It's the third time the event has been held in Mexico, with Trump National Doral in Miami staging the event for the previous decade or so. What do we know, Boxy, about the golf Club de Golf Chapultepec in Mexico City?
That's very well said, that.
A bit like your
Chapultepec,
Filipino golfer.
That's very good. Well, I can tell you it's quite a long course, 7,330 yards, par of 71. But the good thing about that is, for the players, it's played at altitude, so the ball will go probably about 10% further. Pretty tough finish, 15, 16, 17 are all pretty uphill holes. Never really liked uphill holes myself, personally. But it's a bit of a challenging test to finish that. And you've got tree-lined fairways, pretty much just like the PGA Tour most recent event at Riviera, really. But it's it'll be a good course. Not too many bad ones out there, are there, really?
DJ won in 2017. Phil Mickelson won last year. Yeah. I mean, all the big names are playing this week. It's difficult to say if it suits one player or another. I think we'll get a stellar champion, won't we?
Yeah. I think out of the field that's been assembled, you know, there's so many good players. When you actually look down the entry list to try and pick a winner, it's tough because you could make a case for absolutely every single one of them.
Dan's doing not bad, you know, in a few of these things.
You touched on Rory McIlroy just previously. And again, he's going to be one of the favourites this week. Is there just a slight question mark about his sort of mental application to golf at the moment? They sort of questioned his desire, I think, didn't they, last year? I say they, I don't know who they are.
How old is he? 30?
He's 30 this year, I think.
Yeah. I think he's 30, yeah, or 30 this year.
Because, he's a top 10 machine. He's not winning as often as everyone thinks he should do.
No, but he still finished fourth last week, didn't he? I mean, you know, it's not...
But these players aren't interested in fourth,
no, they're not,
they?
But you can't keep winning every week. It's impossible.
Yeah, especially with the amount of amazing players that are out there at the moment. And at the end of the day, I mean, it's easy to put expectations on other people. And the fact is, he's still finishing up there around the top of the leaderboard. And it only takes, I mean, four more putts to drop and he wins. It's not that far away from him, really.
He's always up there, Macro, because he hits the ball so far and puts it in positions. I mean,
his
I would off the
game
tee.
Stats, Boxy, are fantastic.
Cocktail man, return. I would love to be, you know, in my playing days, I would love to be put in a round of golf, like, say, play a US Open, and be put where McIlroy hits his rippers. You know what I mean?
Just to see
what it would be like to play a golf course from there. It would be absolutely fantastic looking at his computer, paying no attention, the presenter there, to try and move that on. So the other thing I was going to say is, if he starts knocking his wedges close, that's when he starts getting up into the top 10 and competing, and he's finished fourth last week, and I think he's going to be not far off.
Okay, we'll get tips in a second. What about Tiger Woods? Is he obviously won last year, won the Tour Championship. Have we seen the best of him so far in the calendar year? I don't think we have we?
I don't think so. I think he gave an interview not so long ago where he said he wasn't interested about being as good as he was. He's interested about being better than he was, which I think's pretty awesome thing to say.
It's a good attitude,
crikey. I mean, in my opinion, he'll never get back to that just because everyone else is so much better. And obviously, you know, he's maybe past the peak of his powers, but, you know, Tiger Woods playing 80% of what he used to be doing, he's still going to win an absolute hatful tournament. So I'm excited because he's just, you know, he is that person who will encourage people to watch.
Francesco Molinari, the Open champion and player of the year last year in Europe. This is his first event since early January. We played in the Tournament of Champions in Hawaii.
Yeah.
Expectations still on Francesco bigger
be.
Than they were? Or
I don't think
is he still flying under the radar a little bit?
No, I don't think he flies under the radar anymore. Not after he's won that Open Championship at Canoosti. I don't have him down to win this week. What I do have him down as is probably one of the most consistent iron players I think I've ever seen. He's do you remember a game called Pro Shot Golf? Do you remember that? I don't know whether you know it was a long. It's
is that
a,
on the
it's
Xbox.
A, it's a golf. No, Lord, it's a golf club. It was an Arnold Palmer. Pro Shot Golf, it was called, and it used to be sharp. And on the end of it was a little bloke.
For those unable to get the video of this podcast, Richard,
he's got his grip out.
Yeah.
So, and down the back.
Hang on a second. Let's get a coach. Just tell me about Boxy's grip here.
Here we go. How's that?
That looks absolutely stunning.
It's okay, isn't it? Okay, that's not bad. So what happens is, see, cocktail man. So, and down the back of the shaft was a trigger. And you used to pull the back of this shaft. Like you set a little golf course up, you know, in your house. It was fantastic with polystyrene golf balls, okay? And at the bottom was a little bloke who used to swing the club exactly the same every single time. And that's what Francesco Molinari reminds me of, Mr. Pro Shot Golf, because he's so consistent, up in the slot, but straight back to the ball again.
Do you think we might get a European winner in Mexico? Tommy Fleetwood has been playing fairly regularly on the PGA Tour. It's difficult for him to keep up what he did over the last 18 months or so, but...
Well, he could do, but do you... Okay, listen, so how many tips are we allowed?
You're allowed two.
Two
each.
Yeah. We've not got to. I just want to run through one or two of the market principles.
And then we can get to the, I'll get the exciting bit, the tips. That's what people want to hear. They don't want to hear about who's playing where.
Well, it says on the running order here, go through the players with Richard and Peter picking out some interesting, obviously interesting points. I'll scrub through your name. Any other Europeans, Pete, that we should have our eye on, do you think, this week?
Well, you've gone for Tommy Fleetwood.
I have not gone for anyone yet.
No, you've suggested Tommy Fleetwood.
I'm going to throw John Rahm on my short list.
John Rahm.
Who else is playing? Ian Poulter?
Yeah, I mean, yes, he could win, yes, but I mean, Alex Noren's been a bit quiet, hasn't he?
He has been. I mean, I'm going to go for Matt Wallace. He's been playing pretty steady.
Yeah, no, good call.
Over the last few weeks.
Come on, let's...
Hang on, listen. You see how Pete and I want to get to the tips, which is the most interesting bit.
Yes, but we have to tell us where everyone's playing. Because
we
put out the official tips as a separate little tweet for our legion of fans, we have to get like a break here. So, let's get the tips for the WGC Mexico event. You're allowed two. Mr. Boxall, what are you going for?
I am
going
to go for Rory McIlroy, which people go...
How did you come up with that name?
Can I have three?
No.
Please. Can I ask my producer? Give me a thumb up. Can I have three?
No, you can't have three.
No, he says no.
Come on.
Excellent stuff. And the choice, the next one is... Well, I'm going to go for John Rahm and Rory McIlroy.
Okay. Pushing the boat out there. Peter?
I'll go for... And I was going to say, I won't pick anyone obvious. Okay. I'll go for Matt Wallace.
Yeah. Like that one.
And
Brooks Koepka.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Brooks, yeah. Okay, I'll skip off that first page. No one's interested in them. And we'll go... We'll go Siwoo Kim, because he played pretty well.
Oh, you see, Siwoo Kim is on my shortlist.
You see, you come out with some beauties. Now we're going to hit...
I thought at one stage last night he might even win, because Thomas was going backwards, obviously, in the end. JB Holmes managed to find a few shots. But I thought post a scorer might get in there. He's a very good player, isn't he?
Yeah, okay. Really good. Really, really good.
I'm stalling for time here. Tips? I will go for... See, I've got Rahm, Siwoo Kim and McIlroy written down. Obviously, you lot have had that.
Why don't you go for Mark Leishman? That was my other one I was going to go
no,
for.
No, I'm not going to go for Mark Leishman. I will go for Brooks Koepka.
Yeah.
Why not? Yeah. You know, just to push the boat out there.
Push the boat out. And Dustin Johnson. So there you go.
And do you know what? I might go for Dustin Johnson as well. Well, that wraps it up for today. Next week, we'll mull over matters in Mexico and also look ahead to the Oman Open. So make sure you join us for that. Until then, you can stay up to date with the latest news from the European Tour via the website, as well as Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat and Instagram. But for now, from Richard Boxall.
Bye.
And from Peter Finch.
Bye.
It is goodbye. We'll see you next time.